Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling today. Joan Pride is with us. She's a hard rocker, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Welcome back, Joan.
Hey there, Jim.
How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
All right. You ready to rock and roll?
Good. Oh, boy. Always.
Hey, Joan. What, oh, what? Oh, pray tell me, are you guys inside the Beltway going to have to talk about now at the cocktail parties?
Well, gosh, I don't know. Well, to what are you referring?
Well, for the last 32 years or so, you've been able to, obviously the big buzz at all cocktail parties. In fact, as far as I know, this is like a D.C. statute now that you have to have, somebody has to talk about who Deep Throat is.
Well, yeah, see, it just shows I don't get out much.
Joan, are you telling me you're not invited to these cocktail parties?
Well, I didn't say I wasn't invited. I just said I didn't go.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, yeah. As you know, folks, since 73 or 4, something like 73,
yeah.
I guess, 4, something like that, the big buzz has been, who is Deep Throat? Deep Throat, Joan, tell us who Deep Throat is.
Well,
not the real person, but who he was in terms of what he did.
Deep Throat was Woodward and Bernstein's, or some people call them Woodstein, Woodward and Bernstein's secret source, really Bob Woodward's secret source.
The two guys
that helped
with the
lead
Post.
Them to the whole Watergate conspiracy.
Right. They were the two reporters, the now famous reporters for the Washington Post, that basically broke the news on what President Nixon was up to, right?
Right, exactly.
And his cover-up.
Yes.
Of some activity that was done, a break-in and all that kind of stuff, and a whole bunch of stuff. So all these years, they've been keeping this from us, haven't they?
They sure have. Well, they had pledged to this individual not to reveal his identity until he was dead.
All right. Now, who are some of the people that typically people have thought were Deep Throat?
Oh, gosh. Number one was Alexander Haig. Number two was Henry Kissinger.
Right.
There was a book that came out that decided it was former White House counsel Fred Fielding.
Also David Gergen.
Now, the interesting thing is I think all the people I just mentioned are probably still alive. But as people started dying off from the Watergate era, you could cross them off your list because they died and yet Deep Throat was not revealed. But, you know, another interesting one was Diane Sawyer.
Yes. Now, I just heard that recently. Yeah. I didn't know that for a long time.
Well, I knew that she was an aide to Nixon, but I didn't realize she was thought to possibly be.
I didn't know she was an aide to him during that period. I thought she worked with him after he resigned.
Oh, no.
But also Pat Buchanan.
Yes.
Was another one.
Yeah.
I mean, there are like a dozen people that could have been, and every single one of them were sexier in terms of being Deep Throat than the guy that's now been revealed.
Well, they did a great little piece on, I think it was CNN, where they went around to people on the street and asking about this guy. No one had ever heard of him.
I never heard of him. Did you ever hear of him?
Yeah, no, never.
Of course, you were just a baby in those days.
Well, that's true.
You were still running around in short pants in those days.
Right. And, exactly.
And so, I mean, Felt is his last name. The number two man.
W. Mark Felt.
The number two man at the FBI. And,
yes.
And of course, now there are the two camps that seem to be out there. One camp is that he's a hero, that he did a great thing for the country, et cetera, et cetera. But in the other camp is saying, well, you know what? He was a sworn officer of the court, a sworn officer, a defender of the law and of the Constitution. He had a responsibility to behave the way that law enforcement officers should behave. And therefore, he actually broke laws.
Well, and as I said to you yesterday, that's why he waited until he was 90-some years old.
The statute of limitations.
Yeah.
They can't get him. And I think the book deal he's probably going to get, maybe the movie deal that he and his family are going to get, is probably going to salve any kind of any kind of negative reaction that he might.
Well, I would think so, absolutely.
But there's got to be there already was a movie made, right?
That they had. Well, All the President's Men, which came from the book that Woodward and Bernstein wrote.
Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford were the stars in that and all that. But there's got to be another one, right? I mean, there probably would be six of those.
Well, I would think so, because Woodward himself is ready to publish a book. He's had ready for a long time about this.
Right. And in fact, I understand it may actually come out in a month or so.
Yes. Yes. And he's all ready to go.
He's been on this show before, by the way. And so
Bob Woodward.
Maybe we'll get him back on. It'd be interesting to ask him some of these questions.
Sure.
Wouldn't it? But I'll probably get him after, maybe I'll get him before Larry King, but maybe not. Anyway, just kind of big doings there. And is it all the buzz in Washington this week, Joan?
Well, it is right now. I'm sure it'll die down in the next day or so.
Yeah.
I don't think this story has a big, long half-life.
Yeah. Well, like it would have had it been somebody who's continued to be in the public eye, right?
Right. Well, yes, exactly.
Like if it had been Al Haig or Pat Buchanan or somebody like that.
Exactly.
Because those guys.
And also someone who is not, this man apparently is elderly. And
he's 91.
He apparently suffers from dementia as well.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yes. So it's not as if he can do the talk show circuit himself.
Right. Yeah. And I don't mean to be uncharitable. It just struck me funny the way you said that. But anyway, I guess it's kind of a historic week, isn't it, Joan? I mean,
sure is.
Because it did result in the only resignation of a president in the history of our country.
Right.
Was
That's
it?
Right.
And
yes.
Do you think somebody speculated, Joan, that I heard somebody speculate that who was it that did that? I forget. I'll think of it in a second. Who speculated that if Nixon had come clean, if he had gone to the public and said, you know what, folks, I did something wrong. We did something we shouldn't have done. I was trying to, it was in my zeal that we did this, and please forgive me. Do you think that would have flown? He could have avoided resigning?
I think it's possible, because I think the main problem with what happened was the cover-up.
Right.
If Nixon had, once he heard about the dirty tricks, had said, this stops here, this is going to end, it would have been, I think, a whole different ballgame. But you have to remember the dirty tricks were such an integral part of his administration.
Right. He had the enemy list. By the way, I was not on. I found out recently.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was not on that list, which I was kind of glad to know about that. Joan, stand by. When we come back, I'm going to ask Joan if Kiplinger, I should say, has the attitude that there's going to be a broad pension collapse after the United Airlines default on their pension plan. Is there going to be one of those? And if there is, what will it do to the economy? 20 after. Stay with us. Say that it lasts just as the time bell rings. So then, life is a gamble, all along. Winners or losers, you keep rolling on. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. Thanks for hanging around with us today. Joan Prater is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, did you know this is National Leave the Office Early Day?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to go.
I think you got to get permission though first, Joan.
Oh.
So, and I'm not going to give you permission yet. You have to stay around for a little while longer.
Oh, all right.
Joan, there are some people who believe that now that United Airlines has defaulted on their pension plan, their defined benefits pension plan, and basically, you know, shucked it over to the government's agency for handling this sort of thing. That now that that's happened, and they did it basically by convincing a bankruptcy judge that they should be out from under that obligation.
Yes.
That there may be other companies that will follow suit. What does Kiplinger think about that?
Well, in terms of a broad pension collapse, we're saying no. And actually, we're using the 1980s savings and loan crisis, which was very broad-based. Mm-hmm. And we say cost taxpayers $125 billion, which is a tremendous, staggering amount here.
Right.
Now, we do admit that pension plans are underfunded by, I hope you're sitting down, $450 billion, mm-hmm. and led by...
That SNL number is peanuts compared to what could happen.
Right. Now, of course, these are not adjusted dollars. So, you know, if you adjusted that 125 for inflation, maybe that comes closer to 450. I don't know. But point is that this large number that we're talking about is led by the legacy air carriers and also the major automakers, which we've talked about before, having a ton of problems with employee benefits, the cost of employee benefits.
Well, these companies find themselves having come through a century where you know, the competitive environment they found themselves in was a lot different than the one they're finding themselves in today. And they still have these commitments that they made in the last century when they had that former, you know, marketplace environment. Now they've got a new marketplace environment that requires them to be competitive in a lot different ways. But
right.
They still have those. They still have that baggage, those legacy expenses, don't they?
That's true. That's a good point.
And that's not only in a pinch from a pension standpoint, but also from a healthcare as well.
Oh, and that's GM's major problem, even worse than pensions.
Right. And so as these companies get closer and closer to their business model making them stare bankruptcy in the face, one of the things, you know, as you know, Joan, when people consider bankruptcy, they you know, part of the deal is that, you know, from a business standpoint is, you know, what will this company what will it be able to jettison, so to speak, and emerge on the other side of bankruptcy if they can, you know, without? And,
right.
And when they look around, they're saying, okay, we've got vendors here, we got banks there, et cetera, et cetera. But historically, I think, Joan, in the past, they haven't actually said, well, what about the pension plans?
Right.
And now they're saying that.
And now they're saying it.
And so that's the key is, and I had Bill Brandt, who is one of the world's experts on workouts. He's a very international workout expert. He was on the show about a week or so ago, and I asked him. I said, "Do you see this as the first of many dominoes?" And he gave me a one-word answer.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Oh.
So it'll be interesting to see. And Joan, there's an organization that the government has developed to handle this kind of a situation. Tell us who that is.
Oh, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Government
PBGC,
agency,
they call it.
PBGC, where if your company pays into the PBGC and then it defaults on its pension obligations, the PBGC comes in and pays your pension benefit. Now, the only problem is it not necessarily 100 cents on the dollar. In fact, it usually never is.
The number I hear is about around 50% or so.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But now the PBGC is already underfunded. It already is underwater with its obligations that is taken over from other entities that have defaulted, not counting throwing the United Airlines on top of it.
That's right, and that's the concern is how do you back up the insurer of last resort? Well, I guess no one thinks that the PBGC is going to default on its obligations because guess who backs it up?
Mm-hmm.
The federal government with
right.
its, you know, limitless, seemingly limitless supply of money.
Well, the RTC, the Resolution Trust Corporation,
solved the
SNL debacle.
Right.
They cleaned it up, I should say. And the PBGC is probably going to be the vessel that will be used to the instrument that will be used to clean any of these messes up. But I'll tell you, Joan, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. I got a problem with the government bailing out these pension plans. And I know that may sound cold, but you know what? The government doesn't come in and bail me out. It's not coming in and bailing my pension plan out.
And these tend to be, I think, rather large companies that we're talking about, because only rather large companies tend to have pensions anymore.
Right.
Old-style pensions.
Right. Well, the thing that for folks who negotiated, you know, exorbitant pensions, or I shouldn't say exorbitant, but unrealistic pensions, at least in terms of the 21st century, you know. Do like a lot of small business owners are doing. You may just have to tough it out. I got a problem with the government bailing out all these pension plans. 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Going to be right back after these messages with Joan Pride. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
High on a mountain of love. Night after night.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. My website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about this pension issue, that the pension collapse of United Airlines that may trigger some others. And it's really brought to put up on everybody's radar screen just how shaky some of these companies may be. And it's sort of put a couple of them on a little bit of a death watch, especially the airline industries and maybe even GM, because, as you know, Joan, GM, partially as a result of their announcement about their shakiness with regard to their defined benefits program, their bonds are now at junk status.
Right.
And I think Ford too, maybe. I think theirs has been dropped considerably. But what is all this going to mean for small businesses, Joan? Is this going to mean the government is going to start tightening up more on some of the plans and the programs that small business owners have out there?
Well, what we're saying is that, if you're talking in terms of firms that fall behind on payments, they're going to have to start putting in more sooner, and they're also going to have to keep workers informed on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to be able to inflate their promises in terms of pension benefits. And I think that's one of the problems, that, you know, there are a lot of promises made about future increases to keep employees happy. And so you're kind of mortgaging the future when you do that. So that's not going
right.
to be allowed anymore.
Well, and of course, what's been happening over the last several years is companies have gone more towards defined contribution plans and away from defined benefits plans, right?
Right, exactly.
And so, do we know of any changes that will be affected? Any plans, any defined contribution plans that will be affected as a result of some of the recent events, the airline failure, that sort of thing.
You mean in terms of how defined contribution plans, of these carriers,
mm-hmm.
would be affected?
Or of anybody else. Will the government start, you know, is this, remember when Sarbanes-Oxley happened? I mean, that was a reaction, an overreaction to all of the corporate malfeasance. Is there going to be an overreaction for 401k plan oversight and that sort of thing, do you think?
Well, I don't know. That's such a different animal. I don't know how
there
you
shouldn't
would.
Be, but you know, I could see how maybe they might try.
Well, they already did. I mean, the main thing that was the problem with the 401ks was the use of company stock in the 401ks, and they've
right.
already legislated on that.
Right.
I don't know what more you could do, because otherwise it's the employee's own money other than the company match.
Right. Right. Well, that's true. And of course, that's the nature of a defined contribution plan as
right.
opposed to a defined benefit.
Right.
Plan.
And in this, we've seen a lot of statistics where companies have been cutting back on the match. So it's even more the employee's own money than it's ever been.
Right. Right. You know, Joan, one of the interesting things about this in the United States is that we do have these kinds of challenges on a corporate case by case basis, and to some degree on an industry basis, the automobile industry, the airline industry, that sort of thing. But these are just company challenges, industry challenges, not full economy challenges. Not the whole basic economy. In Europe, they have this kind of a challenge where they've got defined benefits. They've got management practices, that things like 35 hours of work for 40 hours of pay, automatic 6-week vacations, et cetera, those are not corporate as much as they are national, aren't they?
Right, yeah.
And so those, you know, folks, when you hear about what's happening in Europe and their economies, you know, barely above 1% growth a year, and they're having all these challenges, all this high unemployment, Joan, in Germany and France and Italy, unemployment is really high.
Right.
And so those people, you know, we can solve our problems by you know, helping a company or letting them go broke or whatever, but the rest of the marketplace continues to march and morphs and evolves into a 21st century success story. Europe, they can't do that so much, can they?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the problem.
And so
and Europe is these days. Europe is another whole story we could spend an hour on, given what's been going on with defeating the European Constitution.
That's exactly, and I'm sure that'll be something that we will talk about next week. Joan, stand by, folks. When we come back, I'm going to ask Joan if she thinks that are we looking any more like there might be a real estate bubble out there, and what are the regulators doing about that? Are they cracking down on some of the home lenders? And then we're going to talk a little bit more about fuels and alternative fuels. 22, stay with us.
Of your heart strength and place up and low.
Your love give me such a thrill, but your love don't pay my bills. I need
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and I encourage you to check out their website, folks, because it's a good one, and they got a lot of free stuff there in addition to the section that you can subscribe to. Joan, give us that website, please.
That's right. It's www.kiplinger.com.
And tell us about the publications that we can subscribe to there.
Well, you've got all of our letters, which includes the Kiplinger letter, which we talk about every week, the
right.
Kiplinger tax letter, the California letter, and the agriculture letter.
And those three are biweekly.
That's right.
The Kiplinger letter is weekly, every Friday or Monday if you get it by mail.
Right.
If you get it by email. If you can't wait, you can get it by email.
Get it right away on Friday afternoon.
That's right. I get mine both ways. I can't get enough of it. And,
right.
And then there's, of course, I don't have a life either. But there's that magazine, Joan.
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Give us the phone number.
Well, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And if you ask them really nice and to mention my name, they'll give you
right.
Is it a 30-day free trial, right?
That's right.
I'm working on a 90-day free trial, folks. But
oh,
right
boy,
now,
you're pushing
just,
your luck.
It's just 30 days. Joan,
yeah.
What's the government doing? What are federal regulators doing with home lenders these days? Are they cracking down on some of their practices?
Well, yes, because, you know, given the economy and the run-up in prices and land values, things have been getting a little bit loose. And that the government is a little worried that standards have gotten a little too low in terms of letting people borrow.
Mm-hmm. It's all part of this homeowner bubble, that housing bubble that Mr. Greenspan is concerned about.
That's right. And, you know, this is all cyclical. I'm afraid, you know, one of these days the chickens are going to come home to roost and there will be some defaults.
Yeah, and that is a challenge that we all need to be paying a little more attention to. Another thing that you guys are mentioning in your letter this week is that real estate commissions may be coming down a little bit. Tell us about that dynamic.
Well, we're saying, I always think of them as being 6%, and but in our letter we say an average 5.25%. But because the market is so hot, there's a lot of competition out there. There's a lot more real estate agents, and there's also a move towards selling on the Internet, which
right.
will also pressure commissions to come down.
Right. And exactly. And so that will be an interesting thing to see evolving in that industry, in the real estate selling industry,
right.
To see how the commissions do, especially this tension between the traditional real estate agencies and the online agencies. There's a battle that's being waged right now in that part of the marketplace. That's pretty interesting to watch. Joan, let's move on down and talk about a merger that's happening right now, and that's US Air and America West.
And America West, and we're saying it's good for travelers, as well as being good for those companies who need to merge. But we think that they'll be able to cut their costs, and it'll give US Airways a better chance to survive.
You know, Joan, a lot of people who, you know, I do a good bit of airline travel, and I have actually over the years have had people say, wow, it must be glamorous to travel like that. Well, they're wrong.
Not at all.
There's nothing glamorous about traveling in commercial airlines these days. And something that you've known for a long time, Joan, is that private jets are becoming more appealing. I mean, tell us about your experience.
Oh, I love my private jet. That's
yeah.
right. Well,
Have you got a Lear or a Cessna or a or a Gulfstream?
I can't remember. Oh, I let my assistants deal with the details. Well, what we're talking about isn't just owning a private jet like I do, but owning a fractional share, owning a portion of it. And well, that's becoming a lot more popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, Joan, I'm glad you don't have to share your jet with anybody.
Oh, I would hate to do that. But a lot of people like it.
What about alternative fuels in the automobiles that we're going to be driving in the future, Joan? What's the news there?
Well, we're saying a lot more new cars will be running on alternative fuels within the next 10 years.
Like electricity or a combo of electricity and internal combustion, that kind of thing?
Right. And a lot of this is going to be driven by the need for, well, there'll be tougher air quality rules, and that's what's going to drive the need for these kinds of fuels.
Well, it's interesting to see an awful lot of SUVs on the car lots these days, isn't it?
Oh, no question.
And I don't think we're going to be getting down much below $2 a gallon gas anytime soon, and maybe ever again.
No, not in the near future. No,
maybe never again.
Maybe never again.
There are those kinds of dynamics going on in the marketplace from the standpoint of the availability, the geopolitical conflicts that are going on, the demand by third world countries that are adding an extra degree of difficulty to the supply and demand dynamic, as well as, Joan, the production of finished products.
That's right.
The production capacity or capability, I should say, of these organizations, of these resources, Joan, because if I'm not mistaken, there hasn't been a new gasoline refinery in the United States in like 25 years.
Wow, that's an awfully long time.
Now think about how much increase of gasoline our demand is, and yet we have no new demand, no new capacity.
Right, it's kind of scary.
Well, it is, and so this is going to be a very interesting part of the marketplace to watch too, Joan. Let's move over and talk a little bit about politics, Joan. What's some of the moderates in the Senate have kind of taken over that body, haven't they?
Well, yes, they feel empowered because a group of 14 senators were able to stave off what's known as the nuclear option, which in which they had been expecting the Republican leadership to change the rules and allow majority votes on judicial nominations.
Mm-hmm. And when we come back, I want to talk to Joan about those judicial nominations and about one in particular that may be coming up, maybe two, real soon. Tim Till, stay with us. Back, 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here because otherwise it wouldn't be nearly as much fun, right, Joan?
It's
like a dream come true for you, isn't it, Joan?
Right.
Joan, let's go back to talk a little bit about politics and the judiciary. And you know, let's leave all the lesser judges aside for a moment and talk about the Supreme Court. Now, God bless William Rehnquist, Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist. He's a great American. He served this country well and nobly, and I'm so proud of him, and I wish him all the best. But Joni's not well.
The poor man, yes, he has thyroid cancer, and he has not talked about it in detail, but there's a lot of concern that it's a very serious form of thyroid cancer.
Joan, aren't we watching a profile in courage in
him? Yeah, and he's been photographed in a wheelchair. He's barely able to make it to the sessions. And see, the thing is that the court usually ends its term right around now, and I think his goal was to get through till the end of the term, which he basically has done.
Well, and Joan, I'm trying to remember the recent ruling that he was part of the majority, and he actually wrote, I say, they give him credit for having penned the majority decision on this one case, and I wish I could remember the issue, but they did, you know, his name was actually on that decision that he wrote for the majority. And folks, if you just watched it, when you watch television, it's a profile in courage. But let's move on and talk about what's going to happen. Recently, somebody on the show suggested that very soon, in fact, the former governor of Virginia, Jim Gilmore, was on the show this week, and I asked him, I said, when will we hear? He said, very soon we'll be hearing about that vacancy. And so the question then, Joan, is will Mr. Bush have two fights, so to speak, in the Senate? Will he have, or will he have one? Will he call one person to be the new justice and the chief justice at the same time, the same person, or will he promote somebody from within the chief justice and then have to bring in somebody, which will be a Senate fight, and then have to bring somebody in from outside to fill that slot? What do you think?
And he could do either, because you would think logically that he would just promote somebody from within and then bring in an associate justice. But that's not always been the case. Sometimes a president will appoint a judge from the outside to be the chief justice.
Mm-hmm.
So it could go either way. I think he...
What do you think he'll do?
Well, I would think he wouldn't want to have two fights, but I guess it depends on who he wants to name as chief justice.
I think Scalia will be the next chief justice nominee.
Okay.
And that therefore he'll have two fights.
Okay, hold on, I'm writing this down.
Yeah, right. Make
so
a note. And I also
Scalia.
That's
okay.
Right. And I also think that this summer, or maybe or certainly in 2005, but if not sooner, that we will test this compromise or capitulation, as some people call it, and we'll be back to the nuclear option. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think last week you asked me how long was this going to hold up, and I said 5 minutes.
You looked at your watch, yeah.
Yeah, I looked at my watch and saw the second-hand ticking, but sure, I think there will be a test of it at some point, whether it's on a Supreme Court justice or on some other nomination.
Because there isn't anything more important to the Democrats, especially the liberal wing of the Democrats. The Democrat Party. There isn't any battleground more significant, more important to them than the Supreme Court positions, right?
Well, I don't know. That's a pretty definite statement. I don't know if there could be something else more important. This is certainly up there, though. It's very
other
very
than
important.
Other than electing a president and or a majority in one of the houses. There can't be anything. I mean, this is
right.
This is they see the courts as an important tool of theirs, don't they?
As do the Republicans.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's going to be so. This is a major battleground that's unfolding before in front of our very eyes. Joan, we've got a little bit of time left. Let's move over to health because I want you to say this word for us. Read the first line of the health section. I want you to say this for us. Go ahead.
When they'll be needed most, geriatricians will be hard to find.
Good for you, I don't know why
Did
that
I
was
get
hard.
It?
I don't know why that was hard for me to
well,
say.
You can say pediatrician. You should
know,
be able
I
to
can,
say geriatrician.
Yeah, I can say that. What is a geriatrician?
Well, a geriatrician is someone who treats diseases of the elderly. And we keep saying how the population is getting older, so you're going to need a lot more geriatricians.
But they're going to be hard to find, right?
Sure, there won't be enough of them.
Those,
demand
what is it now,
supply.
Joan? Those geriatricians?
Geriatricians.
Thank you, Joan.
Sure.
See you next week.
Thank
Joan
you.
Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we can't do without her. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.